Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw, the season premiere of Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, the Monday Night Raw season premiere offered some very interesting insights into what the future is going to hold for this brand. And it started out, of course, with Big E, the champion, in the ring, addressing the fact that he is still the champion and that there's a lot of people back there hungry for a title shot. And this leads to the usual thing happening, which is everyone and their brother comes out. It starts with Seth Rollins, who says he's making his return to his show, Monday Night Raw, and he's going to be first in line for a title shot. Now, normally I would say this, number one, this is actually a pretty good matchup. Seth Rollins versus Big E sounds good to me. But they get into a little bit of an exchange where Big E says, and I quote, well, you lost to Edge, so you should be going back to the bottom of the pile. Now, this would be an actually a really good line if it wasn't for the fact that three guys are now going to come out who either have lost their last match or haven't won a match in a while. Finn Balor comes out. Well, Finn Balor lost in the King of the Ring. So why is he any different than Seth Rollins? Big E doesn't bring that up. Obviously, we see Rey Mysterio come out. Rey Mysterio didn't even make it to the King of the Ring. Why doesn't that get brought up? And then Kevin Owens comes out. And Kevin Owens hasn't won anything in so long. I don't remember the last time Kevin Owens has actually won anything. But the good news on this is that these are all guys who have come over from SmackDown. So you're kind of getting the gist of these are going to be the important guys. Four guys in the ring, all wanting to challenge Big E, all from SmackDown. Excuse me. All from SmackDown. And I'm saying to myself, well, that's not a bad way, actually, to introduce everyone into the Monday Night Raw mix. So it's decided there's going to be not just a match, not just a contenders match, but a ladder match to determine the number one contender for the belt. Look, Big E blew it, in my opinion, with the you didn't win anything, you should get to the bottom of the pack, when every single other contender also didn't win anything. But aside from that, I thought this was actually a really good way of getting all of the, presumably most of the top picks that went from SmackDown to Raw in the ring together, letting the fans see these are going to be our top guys, the guys we're really going to be pushing a little bit as top contenders. These are the guys we're the most invested in, and letting them fight it out in a match. So actually, the anticipation for this match, in my opinion anyway, was pretty good. I said to myself, Rey's not winning. But aside from Rey not winning, I mean, Finn could win. Finn could have very easily won that, because you think to yourself, well, he's lost a couple in a row here, and maybe there's going to be an edgier Finn Balor. We're going to maybe see something. He could win. Certainly Kevin Owens could win, and I thought Kevin Owens did an awfully good job of saying, look, I need this win. I absolutely need this win. Because that's reality, we're looking at it saying, yeah, he really does. And he has a history with Big E. Remember when he joined the New Day for a short period of time, and And then they tag teamed later on. And there was he has a history with Big E. So I said, you know what? Kevin Owens could win this. And, of course, Seth Rollins could. And really, to be honest, I said, I'm not 100% sure. Is the Seth Rollins-Edge feud even over? I mean, they said it's over, but, you know, we'll see what ends up happening. So, actually, I thought this was a pretty good start to Monday Night Raw, Todd. And I thought that booking that match early probably made people want to stay and see, you know, the end result.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, one of the Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio and Kevin Owens and Finn Balor came out last night to confront Big E for the WWE Championship. You know, it's a good way to start a Monday Night Raw, like the first time in a long time. Like you said, what about Rey Mysterio? He's just there to put younger talent over, mostly.
Yeah, I didn't think Ray would win, Mike, but I did think it was a good way to introduce what they consider is, you know, their top contenders that they got in their draft pick.
Right, and look, here's another thing it did. Not only did it introduce these contenders, but it allowed Sonya Deville to flex her, I guess what you would call her sole general manager's muscles, because we could have told you what she was going to do, but you know the whole thing about her saying it's going to be a full way, basically her making the match, right.
So yeah,
it did multiple things. That whole opening segment did multiple things.
It did, and I thought it was pretty well handled, except for, of course, someone should have, and I'm sure they wrote it for him, someone probably should have told Big E not to use the line, you lost your last match, why should you be in a contenders match? Because, again, all of these guys did. But aside from that, not too bad. So we get another one contenders match for the tag team titles. And we have the Dirty Dogs, the Street Profits, and Alpha Academy. And once again, it's, you know, introducing the guys from SmackDown. And I got to tell you that, you know, again, I'm looking at this saying, well, I mean, Alpha Academy could win this. It's a new start for them. They certainly could win this. Street Profits absolutely could win it. The Dirty Dogs, I thought, was a bit of an underdog. I said, well, yeah, you know, they've been there. They've been the tag team champions. They're kind of cycling them down a little bit. They haven't really featured them that much. They probably won't win, but, you know, they're in there to show off what they can do, which is still good. And lo and behold, with a little help from Almost, they won. Now, this could be a little bit of a disappointment because, quite obviously, we knew they weren't winning the belts. With the Street Profits, we could have speculated maybe. Even Alpha Academy, you could have speculated maybe they're going to do something with them right away. Not the Dirty Dogs, which is unfortunate because they're actually a really good team. But still, again, you highlighted your draft picks. And, Mike, I don't think you can ask for more than that. I mean, they took it very seriously. They said, these are our new additions, and we're going to put them front and center.
Right, and think about this. Look at the Dirty Dogs. They are in tremendous condition.
Yep.
I mean, the rest of them are too, but the Dirty Dogs more than the other two, because think about it. Rude when he was on SmackDown and a little bit with Ziggler, but they looked a little bit pudgy, but no. They look like they're in tremendous physical condition now. They went off and got themselves in shape, and now they're good to go. And, hey, I mean, that match made all three of those teams look very good.
Yeah, it did. And I guess that's my point, is they really highlighted the new additions and said, look, there's really no bad team here. All of these are good teams. All of these are teams that on any given day could have won that match. And just because the Dirty Dogs had a little bit of help, well, you know, that's their little forte there that they get, you know, lucky sometimes and they're sneaky, but the bottom line is it didn't weaken any of the other teams, I don't think, too much, so you could still use them. So again, you've highlighted your draft picks. In your first two segments, you've highlighted your draft picks. I think that was a really strong point. We now get to Queen Zelina's coronation, and this is why I'm telling you this was a mistake. This, number one, making her Queen of the Ring or whatever you want to call her makes no sense. I like Zelina Vega. I've always liked Zelina Vega. But you never have booked her to be anything more than a mid-carder who occasionally gets lucky with a win. That's it. So when she gets out there and says, I'm the greatest and I'm this and that, no one's buying any of that. No one is buying any of it. And then to add to the weirdness of it, she goes in and out of a British accent. I don't know what the hell she's doing, but it sounds stupid. If you're going to do it the whole entire time, or don't do it at all, or just do it for one line to be sarcastic and say, you know, I'm talking like an English queen because I'm being sarcastic. But no, she faded in and out of it through the whole damn thing. I don't know what the hell she's doing. And then she has to fight Doudrop again. And I feel sorry for Doudrop. When you're actually doing better with Eva Marie than you are when they take Eva Marie away from you, your career's done. I warned you, your career's done. And it's done. Because once again, she loses to Zelina Vega, who can't decide whether she's of English descent or she's a New Yorker or she's Hispanic. She had no idea. And it's done with the old, well, I'm going to hit you with a scepter thing, which is done a bazillion times. And unfortunately, Zelina Vega just isn't really super good at it. And if she could have hit her any lighter with that scepter, you would not have killed a fly if it was sitting on the mat. And 240-pound Doudrop has to be unconscious. Terrible. That's why the Queen of the Ring thing didn't work. You have to pick someone who has people's respect. And you say, well, yeah, she's going to be tough to beat. She was tough to beat before. She's going to be tough to beat now. Zelina Vega was never any of those things. So it's not working. You can try to revamp her character as, I'm going to be this cunning, clever, cheating, win by luck. It's not going to work. Because we remember who she used to be. And unfortunately, this match fell flat for me, Todd. So, I give this pretty low marks. I think it would just kind of ruined Doudrop, and it did nothing for Zelina Vega.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this match with Doudrop and so-called Queen Celine Vega, it was just one of those matches like, this match is not going to be great. It's not kind of for me for her queen either. And, you know, she should have done, like, not beat the queen. I would have the other way around, have Doudrop beat the queen or something like that.
You know, you could have easily made Carmella even because she has that, you know, I'm a princess sort of thing. It was the wrong move. I think the WWE understands it's the wrong move. It's not working for her, Mike. And to be honest with you, both characters left that ring worse off instead of better off.
Right. I mean, I've said it before about Doudrop. First off, you might as well turn her back into Piper Niven or Viper Niven or whatever you want to call her that she was before, because the Doudrop thing is done, right? I mean, look, I've said it before. She's a much better wrestler than some of the bigger wrestlers, than some of the bigger people they have there, and we know who I'm talking about, right? You know, she's safer, she's this, she's that, she can go in the ring. But again, what is that dang scepter made of that you're not going to be, why wouldn't you be able to hit a 240-pound Doudrop with a scepter? And it you know, not be effective.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. And then the way she hit her was even worse because, I mean, it was literally a love tap. It wouldn't have knocked out a fly. It just – Dewdrop has no choice but to sell that. But I would have had words in the dressing room, and I would have said, if you're going to do that move, could you possibly make it look like it hurts? Because that just makes me look like a complete putz. That just makes me look like I'm garbage. You did me no favors. I know you got to be careful. You don't want to give nobody a concussion. I get all that stuff. But if you got to be that careful, don't do that ending because it doesn't work. It just looks terrible. Anyway, Damian Priest comes out for his challenge, and they've decided to revamp the Damian Priest character. I don't know why. I really don't. I mean, you've ran with him this way for I don't know how long, where he's just sort of this, I don't know what you want to call him, laid back, cool, calm, and collected dude. It's just, yeah, man, you know, happy to be here, happy to be participating. I get mad at some people once in a while, but yeah, it's all good. I got it handled. And now you want to make him, I knew something was up when Corey Graves said he's the personification of both good and evil. Well, since when? What was evil about Damian Priest before this? Somebody please tell me. When he was dancing around with Bad Bunny? When they were spraying the New Day and him were spraying Morrison and The Miz? And what was evil? What was dark and sinister? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So you have obviously decided to revamp his character. And the gimmick was when T-Bar, who was his opponent, hits him with a office chair, he snaps. They end up with a disqualification, which, to be honest, I'm okay with that ending because it protects T-Bar a little bit, even though he mauls T-Bar after that. But it protects him a little bit, at least. Now, these guys had great matches over in NXT. They're very used to each other. This was nowhere near that type of a match. And it was done more to get over this new Damian Priest tweaking of the character, which is, I guess, like a, I snap. If you do something too violent, I snap. I'm not sure I'm going to like this. Some people wrote me and said they did like it. I would have liked it if that's what you did from the beginning, but you've introduced him as a totally different type of guy. I didn't see any of that when The Miz was pulling all that bullshit on him. I didn't see any of that. I didn't see that when Sheamus was doing all the stuff Sheamus did to him. I didn't see any of that. Now just throwing an office chair does it. And it kind of makes it look phony because we as fans say, well, wait a minute, where was this a month, 2 months ago? So I'm not sure I like this, Mike. I do think at least they protected T-Bar in the ending, but I'm not sure I like this.
Right. And look, here, I'm not sure I like it either, but at least they protected a guy that fits the bill of a guy of what you say you want. You know, T-Bar is, well, T-Bar slash Dijakovic is a guy that he's 6'7", he's 270 pounds, he's a bigger guy. That's the type of guy you want, right? At least that's the type of guy they say you want, they want, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see what they do with him. I mean, they didn't make him look very good toward the end after the disqualification, but at the same time, he didn't get pinned or made to submit, so I guess that's a little something. We then get to Carmella versus Liv Morgan, which is a really weird thing because they involved Corey Graves in this to a large degree, and they finally sort of broke that kayfabe, and he admitted he was engaged to her. And like, the Liv Morgan kind of used that as well, and I don't know about this. I do feel sorry for Liv Morgan because anytime Liv Morgan starts to get a little bit of a push, they decide to push somebody else and use her as the person to carry that push. She was getting pushed a little bit And now it's right back down to losing in 7 minutes, 6 minutes to Carmella. Granted, with some distraction and things, but still, she still loses. And it's obvious now, you know, on all of the SmackDown people that came over, they've decided these are the ones we're going to push. And we'll just let the Raw guys hang, except, of course, Damian Priest, but he's champion. I mean, you know, it was what it was, Todd. It wasn't a great match, but if you're going to run with Carmella, fine. I just found it weird that they sort of broke that kayfabe and admitted that Corey Graves is engaged to her.
You're absolutely right, you know, like you said, about the Corey Graves and the Carmella being engaged and everything. And we all kind of knew that they were seeing each other. And it was no secret there. You know, like you said, every time they push, like a Liv Morgan or somebody, they throw her under the bus for somebody else.
Yeah, every time she gets started, Mike, she gets stalled almost instantly.
I mean, look, here's the deal. We know that she's very good friends with Ruby Soho, right? And I guess maybe even what's her name? I'm blanking on her name now. Sarah
Logan.
The other one that was in the ride.
Yeah, Sarah Logan.
Sarah Logan. Yeah, but we know that she's good friends with both of those two girls. And look, here's the deal. I like what they're doing with her. You know, with her with being the most beautiful woman in the world, and that mask and that. I mean, that mask is a weapon, all right? Right? Am I complaining to somebody else with her? But the mask is a weapon, you know? And it's like, okay, if you're going to do that, then that's a way to push somebody. So I like what they're doing with her. But, again, like you said, I just don't get it. Why do you decide to send her? First, they decided to send her down and give her a new gimmick, right?
Yep.
Send her back down to NXT and give her a new gimmick, right? And then they bring her up and they don't use the gimmick. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's really weird. It's almost like the WWE. Last night I felt like the WWE was saying to us, everything that came before this to a large extent doesn't matter. If you knew how characters were, they're not going to be that way anymore. We are wiping the slate clean. We are starting as if this is episode one. And it kind of felt that way sometimes. Not necessarily always a bad thing, but I just scratch my head with some of these things because, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you seem to want to do that a lot. Next is Keith Bearcat Lee, who we were all told we're going to get a big push as a heel. And my assumption is they were going to work him up to face Big E. Well, he doesn't look like a heel to me. And went against Cedric Alexander, which certainly doesn't make him a heel. It looks like they're going to set him up for Lashley. That's what I'm thinking is, you know, Cedric, maybe next week we're going to see Shelton Benjamin. And then eventually it'll be Lashley. Which I hope not, because then whichever one loses, that's going to set their career back, because you're just starting to promote Keith Lee now, and Lashley is really on a down cycle and needs to be elevated. So I don't know, but he made pretty quick work of Cedric Alexander. Sheldon Benjamin acted like he wanted some but didn't really want any. You know, it was a good thing to promote Keith Lee. I think you could have probably come up with somebody better suited to lose than Cedric Alexander, because I would think that, you know, you'd want to elevate them a little bit too, but apparently I'm wrong, Mike. Apparently they just, again, they're cannon fodder.
Yeah, apparently so. And my thing with this is Keith Bearcat Lee, that's a heel gimmick. I mean, to me, I would almost look at Keith Lee and I'll say, well, if you're going to go whole hog with the heel gimmick with Keith Lee, then fine. Go whole hog with it. And, hey, he would fit into a newly revamped Hurt Business very well.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It doesn't look like they want to do it. It doesn't look like they're going to turn Keith Lee into a heel. So, okay. We'll see what they do with him then. We'll see where his next feuds go. We get a weird thing with, I'll take a little bit of that out of order, but we get a weird thing with Becky Lynch, don't we? Because Becky Lynch coming over here after the problems with Charlotte didn't really act that much like a heel. I mean, I don't know. It's almost like the WWE's thinking twice. Yeah, she did brag a little bit and say whatever, but, I mean, she even said, finally I've come back around to Texas and got the big pop. And I don't know. Then Bianca Belair gets in there and says, I don't need to be, I have a belt to be the best. You're not the quickest. You're not the strongest. You're not the fastest. You're not this. And I'm saying, well, how is she any less of a heel than Becky? If Becky got in and said the same thing, I'm the best, I'm this, I'm that, you'd say, well, that's Becky being a heel. Then how come that's not Bianca being a heel? I'm not really sure I like this dynamic because it's almost like the WWE saying, well, cheer for who you want. We don't really care. Becky's the way she is. If you like her that way, great. Cheer for her. Bianca's the way she is. If you like her that way, great. Cheer for her. Neither one of them's really a heel. And that's the way I'm starting to feel. Basically, Bianca Belair said, whether I have a belt or not, I'm still the best wrestler. The belt doesn't mean you're the best. Well, yeah, it does, actually. So you're disrespecting the belt. You're saying the person who owns the belt isn't necessarily the best. Then why do you want it? You know, that would have been my question if I asked Becky Lynch. If she said, well, you know, the belt doesn't mean you're the best, then Becky Lynch should have said, then why do you want it? If you're so confident that you're the best, why do you need this belt to prove it? Obviously, you do want the belt, so obviously that's not the truth. I just think Becky came off a little tiny bit heelish, but so did Bianca. So I don't know what they're doing here, Todd. To me, it seems like they're just telling fans, make up your own mind.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. When Bianca Belair said, I don't need the belt to be the best, that's more the heel more than Becky Lynch is being. It looks like Bianca Belair is being more of the heel than Becky Lynch is doing. And technically, by the looks of it, with Becky Lynch, she looks like acting more like the face in this.
It depends on your perspective. I mean, she literally said to Becky Lynch, you need that belt to be who you are. I don't. Well, that's disrespecting the belt. Shouldn't every single woman wrestler want that belt? So for Bianca Belair to say, I don't need it, I'm still the best, well, then why even bother taking a title shot? It made her sound extremely arrogant, and I don't understand it.
Well, yeah, I don't understand it either. But also, on the Becky Lynch side, you know, it's almost as if they're admitting by saying, cheer for who you want. They're admitting I've been saying for a long time with Becky Lynch, that it's going to be almost impossible for you to get people to boo Becky Lynch, you know, and for Becky Lynch to be a heel, and them saying basically cheer for who you want, that's, like I said, that's almost admitting that. And yeah, Becky Lynch may or may not be able to get them to do it, but I've said it before, it's going to be incredibly difficult because people don't have that short of an attention span that they don't remember that Becky Lynch is just coming back from having a baby. In fact, from what I understand, they're going to try and bring Asuka back as a heel. Okay? Now, again, will that take? I don't know, because people remember Asuka as that bubbly, yelling, you know, face type person. But it might work better with Asuka than with Becky Lynch, because, again, Becky Lynch is coming off. We all know what Becky Lynch is coming off of. And they should never have tried to make Becky Lynch a heel.
Yeah, I don't know if they're not a heel. That only person who do that is Asuka. Because everyone remembers how happy Asuka was for Becky Lynch being pregnant and that Becky Lynch gave her the belt and all that kind of stuff. And if Becky Lynch ambushed Asuka somehow, fans would probably boo Becky Lynch. That would probably be the straw that broke the camel's back. But if they're going to bring Asuka back as a heel, that's going to be hard too. Because we've been there, done that. I mean, they said she wasn't, but I mean, come on. When she first came in, if that wasn't a heel gimmick, I don't know what was. Nobody's ready for Asuka, and she was unbeatable and all that kind of stuff. That was a heel gimmick as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, we go back to Austin Theory in the dressing room asking if he can take a selfie with Rey Mysterio and then tells Rey Mysterio's son Dominic, why don't you just take the picture? To which Dominic says, look, I'm not a photographer, okay? And Austin Theory challenges him to a match. Austin Theory is doing great work. Give Austin Theory a lot of credit. He is doing great heel work. This is a typical heel. He's a little bit, what's the right word for it? He's a little bit silly, but he's also serious. He's serious enough to be a challenge. At the same time, he's a little goofy. We get that. He's almost like The Miz when The Miz is dead serious to a certain extent. And this disingenuous, I want to take a picture with my heroes, but he's really dissing them type thing, is working. And the WWE is doing this correctly. Now, I had a lot of worries about this match because I said, oh, dear, if we go out there and Dominic pulls this victory off, that is it. That is it for Austin Theory. Because already, he's been Jeff Hardy, but then Jeff Hardy beats him up. And I'm like, if he loses to Dominic, he's just going to be this annoying character that gets his ass kicked, like Sami Zayn. He's real annoying, but he really don't win. And that's not what you want. Well, to their credit, Austin Theory won in a pretty convincing manner, and he's looking like a guy who you could really see moving up the card quickly. And I know a lot of people have said to me, well, who's next for Damian Priest? And I still say it's Karrion Kross. But I could see Austin Theory. I could see those guys fighting for that belt. I think Theory's doing a wonderful job. I thought it was a good match. I think they're handling this character exactly the way the WWE used to handle new heels coming into the Federation, Mike. And for that reason, I think he's got a good future.
Right. And think about this. What was he doing down in NXT, Austin Theory? He was with Gargano and LeRae, right? With the whole way thing, and that's kind of an annoying gimmick. And he basically learned this from Johnny Gargano.
Yeah, listen, there's no question that he benefited from his time in NXT. I remember they brought him up before. Austin Theory, this is not his first time being on the main roster. But this is working. This is working a lot better. And he feels to me like a guy who has more experience than he does. In other words, when I'm watching it, I'm saying he doesn't seem green or a little hesitant or anything. He seems very positive in what he's doing. He's a guy who knows what his character's supposed to be, and he gets it. That's important. You know, Keith Lee recently did an interview where he said he thought his wrestling career was over due to the COVID thing. And then he said COVID wasn't so bad. It was the complications afterwards. It was problems with his heart and other things. He said, I thought my career was over. And luckily, everything worked out. But he said, I needed to go to Vince McMahon. And you have to say, what is it exactly that you want from me? Because if you just assume, if you just get a character or you get a spot and you say, well, okay, I'll fill in the blanks, it may not be what he wants. And at the end of the day, I want to give my boss what he wants. So I needed to go to Vince McMahon and say, what is it that you want? I need to have direction. I need to understand what is it you expect from me, how you want me to act, what you want me to do. I need to know these things so that I can incorporate it. Now, that's exactly what AJ Styles did. So I think a lesson can be learned here. If Keith Lee amounts to anything, this could be the turning point where he literally says, look, this is the guy I work for. This is the guy who runs the Federation. He knows what he wants. Why is this different than a director in a movie? See, I get people all the time saying, Vince McMahon wants people to do everything he says. Well, yeah, that's what a director does in a movie. Okay? If you say your line and they're like, listen, you shouldn't say your line that way. You said your line kind of sarcastically. I don't want sarcastic. I want dramatic. The actor doesn't say, oh, you're telling me what to do. No, that's your boss. You say, oh, okay, I'll do it dramatic then. I don't see a problem with this. This is why, unfortunately, when we muddle up whether wrestling is a sport, which it is not, or it's an entertainment vessel, which it most definitely is, this is the trouble you come up with. You come up with fans who think, just let the athletes be athletes. No, since when? They don't even do that in baseball. If your manager or your coach tells you to play a little to the left for a hitter, you don't say, no. No, I'm going to do it here. You don't do that. Keith Lee going to Vince McMahon and saying, I need to know exactly what you want, what you expect of me so I can give it to you. I think that's a positive thing, Todd. I don't think in any way, shape, or form that's a negative.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, we talk about this plenty of times about saying wrestling's a sport. But no, it's not. It's a sports entertainment. Like you said, it's predetermined.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, there's nothing wrong with wanting to know what your boss expects from you.
Right. There is nothing wrong with knowing what your boss expects from you. I mean, directors in movies, let's go back and use that example. I'll go back to Dirty Dancing. The director of that movie wanted Patrick Swayze at the end of the movie to say, what was the most famous line in that movie? Nobody puts baby in a corner, right? Patrick Swayze did not want to say that line. He thought it was too hokey, too gimmicky, or whatever. He just didn't want to say it. But it turned out that that was the biggest moment, the biggest line in the movie, right?
Right, yeah.
So the director was right in making him say that line. Just like the whole thing with Die Hards, when he says when Bruce Willis says yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, you know.
Yeah.
That in those movies, that's the biggest line in the movie because that gets the biggest cheer in the movie. It doesn't matter that the movie's 25, 30 years old, it still gets the biggest cheer in the movie because it's the biggest line in the movie and it should have been said. You know?
Yeah, and, look, the director, for instance, John Carpenter said, I let Roddy Piper run a little bit because I knew if I'm going to hire Roddy Piper, I got to let him be Roddy Piper to a certain extent. So I told him, you can go ahead and ad-lib. If you got some ad-libs, go ahead, throw them in. If we don't like them, we'll just take them out of the movie, but go ahead, flex your muscle a little bit here. Well, Vince McMahon can do the same thing. If Vince McMahon trusts somebody on the mic or trust somebody with their character, he can say, shoot from the hip a little bit. Let's see what you got. He has the option to do that, but he's still – John Carpenter told Roddy Piper to do that, which is still the director's decision. If Vince McMahon told Keith Lee, let's see what you got, just do what you're going to do, then that's still Vince McMahon's decision. That's still giving the boss what they want. That's what I want people to understand. Anyway, RK-Bro gets ready for their match against the Dirty Dogs. First time in a long time I actually laughed at anything Riddle said when he suggested they dress up as the girls from The Shining. It was actually pretty funny. Randy Orton's reaction is what makes that. Again, Matt Riddle is a very lucky man because Matt Riddle's character was not going over at all in the WWE. It was going exactly nowhere. He was starting to lose matches. Fans were starting to not get onto his side. They were starting to boo him a little bit. They were knowing that he had. With Randy Orton saved Matt Riddle's career, period. Because the juxtaposition between the two, the dead serious athlete and this completely lame-brained, off the deep end guy, has some charisma to it. Because Randy Orton's reaction is what our reaction is, and so we feel like, well, he's not doing it to us, he's doing it to Randy, and Randy's reacting properly. So both of these guys are doing their job very well. That's why they're the most popular tag team. This was a good, solid match. A lot of people wrote to me and said, I hated the ending. I loved the ending. I loved the ending to this match. After reversal of reversal of reversal, it was just simply really a roll-up that won. It wasn't hitting a big finisher that devastates them. It wasn't, you know, double-team effort. It wasn't some referee mistake. It wasn't anything. It was just a simple wrestling move.